shots in the pool. That is not cool. I need the tool. Take me to school. Feet first into this league. Me first. That cannot be. Under the underdog Monica G. Feeling a whole lot better suddenly. I get in with it. Winning again. You're 1-2 in the bag and I'm going for 3. That is the beat down. God are the best, so I keep now. Y'all treading water for weeks now. Now I'm the shark, so I eat now. Look, I am not sorry. I understood the pun from which I started. And navigating these drafts is cathartic. So...
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 192 of Dynasty Underdog. I'm your host, Uriah Dawkins, who came in a little too early this time, but that's okay. I have Billy with me, Jake with me. What's going on, guys?
Oh, man, not much, dude. I am getting absolutely amped up for this this Matt Waldman show we're doing tomorrow night. That RSP is an absolute monster, dude. This guy is a maniac. Like, I thought, like, I mean, I know my process takes an exorbitant amount of time, but then you dig into this guy's process and you're like, oh boy, wow, this is like 2-3 full-time jobs that he's really kind of put together there. So super stoked to get into that with him tomorrow, and that'll be out. I'll drop it on the YouTube channel as soon as possible, and same with the pod stream.
That's a lot to look forward to, man. Like, as soon as that drops, I'm going in there and making sure to like and subscribe, you know.
Yeah, I love it. And I didn't even know Jake was going to be here tonight, so I'm actually like, I'm very stoked for this show. It's going to be fun.
All right, we'll hop some news, some nonsense. So while we have Cortland Sutton, Justin Jefferson, and CeeDee Lamb all sitting out for their, voluntary workouts that they have, you know, vets aren't necessarily have to be there. Usually the quarterbacks show up anyway. But while that's going down, the Eagles, always pretty smart with their money, they extended Devontae Smith and they gave him a 3-year, $75 million little upgrade to stay home. So
I mean, you got to love being an Eagles fan. They always seem to do the right thing in terms of the contract work. And this is just another example of it, you know, getting kind of ahead. Honestly, they're getting ahead of the market, right? Because once these other wide receivers get big money deals, Devontae Smith would be looking at this like, where, you know, let me get a chunk of change like that. And so I think, you know, from that respect, it's just like a smart business move, but also keeping just a great wide receiver where he was drafted and continue to develop him. So it's a good move all around. And I think a good move for the player, like in terms of dynasty too.
Yeah. The only thing I'll add is that I think the contract, if I looked at it correctly, also pays him out slightly less per year than AJ Brown. So they also keep AJ Brown happy. He seems like the type of wide receiver, right? If he turns into the second highest paid wide receiver, he's going to have issues. So This is a great little optical illusion for everyone to just get paid, but also keep AJ Brown shutting up for the rest of the offseason.
I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely right. They're all divas.
especially him. And I'm a huge AJ Brown fan, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm pretty high up on him. You can look at our rankings. I have him up higher than Billy does. Like, it's just a reality. The dude's got some personality off the field and on the field. We've seen it in both in-game and in the locker room. So, you know, you got to keep these guys happy. That's part of the gig. And sometimes the GMs, honestly, are the ones who are driving that more than the coaching. And I think a lot of people don't actually realize that. But this is definitely some internalized PR. I think this is keeping everybody happy.
Love that shout.
Smart man.
Heady.
That's how I keep my players happy, you know?
Dallas could never in a million years. We're just going to franchise tag like our best stars for like 2 years and then pay them.
Oh, please.
Top market. It's like, oh my God.
Oh God. I mean, maybe New England's slowly getting out of that era for themselves, but they're not ones to pay a soul. That's why they don't have any talent on the team, because they never paid a wide receiver to come over. So yeah, man, I understand that for sure. But it just makes what Philly did, you know, you can see from an outside perspective looking in, like, it's just a great move.
All right, so it's still prospect profile time. So Billy tasked us with Javon Baker and Jermaine Burton, two wide receivers who have some similarities from my point of view. So let's hop into it with Baker. Javon Baker, 6'1", 202, four-star recruit. He declared, I'm going to call it 3 years, because looking at his stats, year one, he only played one game. I don't know if there's an injury or what exactly happened there, but I'm going to give him a pass and say that he had 3 years of actual play in college. His average dominator was 27.3%. Pretty good. Average yards per team attempt, 1.01. Also middle of the field, not too bad compared to the last two classes. His last year's yard per route run is 3.21. Excellent. Yards after the catch per reception, 7.2. An ADOT of 17.1. Slot rate of 27.1. Last year's zone yard per route run was 3.14. And his man yard per route run was 3.18. Both very, very, very good marks. His contested catch percentage was 56.3. I didn't look at his rate as to see how many those contested catches, how many of his targets were actually contested to kind of gauge inspiration. But it was kind of nice to match him up with Burton, as they both actually caught 56.3% of their contested catches or contested targets. His career best target percentage was 23.2. It's a little low, but it's over 20, so that's fine. And a breakout age of 20.5, which is great. His 40 time here at a 4.54, and his projected draft capital based on NFL mock database was pick 95. So they're looking at Baker as back end of round 3. What do you guys got?
It's funny. Yeah, I think this is one of those situations where, for the most part, the data kind of lines up with what we're seeing on tape, at least from my perspective. So, you know, his game is really mainly based on separation, in my opinion, either through above average route technique or manipulation or physicality at the top of the route. Really, kind of at every phase of the route, he does exhibit the ability to separate. Extremely reliable hands, really one of his best assets. I mean, he doesn't drop anything, in my opinion. Good transition speed, fluidity, but appears to lack something after the catch. And I think it's mostly probably something like lateral agility. Wouldn't describe him as super elusive, more of like a possession type of receiver, if I can say it that way. He can break away for big gains, but unlikely to force missed tackles or evade multiple defenders. And he gave me a little bit of like a Michael Thomas vibe, just kind of like stylistically. Jake, did you see anything similar to what I'm putting out there?
Yeah, I think you've actually basically nailed it. The one thing I will say that you said that I want to clarify is that his hands are great is not an opinion. I think you can see it on tape. Like, the dude just doesn't draw passes. Like, and I've watched a lot of this dude, because when I started seeing a lot of commentary about him on Twitter, I was just like, I've no joke never heard of Javon Baker. I haven't watched a lot of UCF. Learning a little bit more about him and his transfer to UCF from Alabama, you can definitely see the talent underlying there as an Alabama recruit. You know, the four-star recruit definitely kind of aligns well with the player in which you see. I do agree with Billy, though. His lack of elusiveness after catch, definitely very evident. The one thing that I did really like about him, though, is just the way in which he interacts in contested spaces. I'm not even calling them contested catches, but contested spaces. So, you know, whenever there's a corner or any type of defensive back in his general vicinity, he's very conscientious of his space. And I think that we also saw something like this with Roman Wilson. I don't know if you guys have covered him specifically on the show yet, but I know that Billy's done also a couple of YouTube shorts. So, you know, go over there, check out the YouTube shorts on Roman Wilson. But that ability to basically make a break right when receiving a catch to get away from that first defender. After that, you know, not the best, but I did think that some of his field awareness before catch was pretty interesting. There's a lot there that I think could be probably refined with some positive coaching, but the big thing that he doesn't have going for him is that excessive speed that you probably would like to see in a modern day wide receiver one. So, you know, kind of to Billy's comp with Michael Thomas, you are kind of going back a few generations to those types of wide receiver ones that I just don't think are necessarily what we're going to see moving forward. But I still think he'll be potentially a very successful receiver depending on his landing spot.
He's definitely a space creator, and he has really good body control and spatial awareness and kind of an understanding of how to manipulate space, right? I think that's what he's good at doing, and it shows up in terms of the separation. What's interesting in terms of like the data, yards after catch per reception is pretty good. Like 7.2 is actually a really good mark. I mean, if you look at some of the better receivers in the class, they're in that range. So like I said, he can break away for big gains. Like, he's an athletic dude and he's a big guy, but again, I don't think he's making guys miss super often. And just to touch on what Jake was saying with the hands, he got the highest grade for hands that you can for ball skills, essentially, in this class. But just some of the notes, I mean, high points off target passes, consistently shows ability to catch away from the body. He has like an out of bounds one hander. Like the guy he's all over the field, just catching everything anywhere. It doesn't matter if it's inbounds or out of bounds. So he's really talented, but there's definitely some warts. I mean, it's worth mentioning he was at Alabama and then he couldn't really get on the field there necessarily. And so transferred out, he was going to Kansas, that broke down, and then he ended up at UCF. So, I mean, that's definitely why he's kind of in the ADP of 32 wide receiver 15 range in the class. But, you know, talking about this kind of guy with that career yards perception, just seeing, I think also, I mean, what he was doing versus zone and man this year is pretty impressive. Like, it doesn't really matter what kind of coverage he's facing, but he might be a decent value. I don't know. Are you guys interested in him in the third round? I mean, he's even a little bit lower for us in KTC. So, you know, you might get him depending on landing spot. Could be later, but I don't know. How interested are you in this guy?
I was just gonna say, there's nothing about him that is a red flag for me. So okay. I would have no problem in a draft if it's at ADP selecting him. Yeah, I'd take a chance on him. 6'2", yeah. 2'2", like, I don't see why not.
I think this ADP is a little off from the mocks that I've seen, at least. And maybe it just depends on like where you're actually going into those mocks and like what types of communities you're interacting with. But I will say with a lot of the mocks that I've seen, he's honestly hitting like late second round. And that's kind of crazy to me. There's a lot of hype behind him right now, and he's jumping over a lot of high-end receivers, in my opinion. At cost, I would say I'm probably bailing unless the landing spot makes a ton of sense, because I do think that there's something there. But right now, I have noticed him, like I said, kind of landing in that like 207 to 212 range, and that doesn't feel as right as at 32. At 32... I'm definitely smashing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think our rank reflects that though too, right? The DU rank is at 42, wide receiver 21. So we're lower than everybody, which is fine, honestly, with this kind of profile, especially like you're saying, if he's being pushed up over those kind of guys, then we just won't have that much of him, I guess. We'll see. That might even out in normal drafts, but real shade on DLF's ADP there, man, on their community.
Well,
talking about a bunch of jokesters in there, huh?
Bunch of losers. Yeah, no. The one thing I will say too, just to finalize on Javon Baker, is that the quarterback play was honestly dreadful. One of the big things that, yes, you know, you were talking about his yak ability, and realistically, he did create his almost 22 yards per catch average this year. Like, it was really on him and not due to quarterback play. I think the dude only landed slightly above 50 receptions, considering he was still the true wide receiver one. Really says a lot. I think he was at what, 52 receptions for almost 1200 yards. Like, that's just borderline insane, but more so relates honestly strongly to just really poor quarterback play. And honestly, I think we'll probably dive in a little bit with that too with regards to Jermaine Burton as well, so we can jump into there.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Jermaine Burton, 6 foot, 196, also a 4-star recruit. Declared after his fourth year of college with an average college dominator, 19.6%. His average yard per team attempt is 0.72, which is kind of low, but honestly, if you go back over the last two draft classes, it does put him in like the bottom third, but it's not terrible. Last year's yards per route run was 2.75, which is a good number. His yards after the catch per reception is only 3.4. So I'm not really sure what that has to do. I'm really not sure like what you guys will say about that, but that's a pretty low number. His ADOT's 20.2, so maybe he's making a bunch of catches on the sideline and getting tackled right away. I don't know. Slot percentage was 19.9, so about 20% out of the slot. Last year's zone yards per route run was 3.17, but against man, it was only 1.83. The exact same contested catch rate, 56.3, as Javon Baker. And his career best target percentage was 18.9. So he's not really, really taking over that wide receiver room in like a huge way. Breakout age, 22.2. So not only was his career best target percentage less than 20%, but he didn't even like break out until he was ready for that AARP membership. He ran a 4.45 40 time. And they have him projected NFL mock database, because the other one that I use, Grinding the Mocks, does not have people past the second round right now, but they're projecting as the 84th pick. So sometime mid third. So these guys will be probably going very similar range in the NFL draft. What do you guys see on film?
Interesting. I mean, I'll just jump in real quick and say the 3.4 yards after the catch per reception may have something to do with quarterback play and kind of how he was utilized. Very much downfield threat, not a ton of opportunity to work after the catch, I don't think, just based on kind of what I was looking at on film. A lot of his route technique is driven through footwork through the entire route. Like, he doesn't have a ton of, he's not utilizing a ton of manipulation in his upper body, which he's winning enough, but like you'd like to see a little bit more nuance from that respect. He exhibits excellent vertical burst. I mean, this dude feels like he was shot out of a cannon sometimes. It's really impressive. Like, acceleration from release, just really good stuff. And his ball skills are definitely one of his best traits. Both of these guys, I think, excellent ball skills. I don't think he hit the highest mark, but he was maybe, you know, a point or two away. Really high energy guy from his release. And I think it, you know, it gives him a lot of opportunity matched with pretty decent route technique, right? Like, he's not just this burner, one trick pony. I do think that he offers a little bit more than just that. I didn't see a ton after the catch, to be honest, on film, but like I said, I don't think that he was given the opportunity. But even when he was given the opportunity, I don't think he's extremely elusive. You do see some clips out there from his days back at, I think, Georgia maybe, of him, you know, putting on some good work after the catch, but I just didn't see a ton of it. So, you know, in his final year, and when you do see it, I don't think he exhibits like great lateral agility or anything like that. So, I mean, he's very similar, I think, to Javon Baker. I like Baker a little bit more. I think that he's a little bit more well-rounded than Jermaine Burton. What about you, Jake? What did you see?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely with you on a lot of points. I almost feel like we watch tape, unfortunately, way too similar, so I don't come in with that much of a different perspective, unfortunately. But I will say the two major things, to your point, Jalen Milroe, you know, his massive, like, need for extending play really messes with us understanding how good of a receiver Jermaine Burton is, which honestly for me is kind of a red flag, because I can't really see it in tape of how he handles both first phase of his actual route running and second phase. I will say end of his like downfield presence is actually really, really solid. So, you know, those like extended plays, being able to break off corners and DBs into open space is pretty solid. Unfortunately, he does kind of lack some of that extension towards some of the sidelines, I notice. So like his big thing is always, and you'll see this in tape, he extends plays through the middle of the field, almost like you would imagine a play in kind of like old school Madden, where you just like run around forever and the wide receiver just breaks off finally in the middle of the field for a 25-yard reception. And then the cornerback just like takes his legs out like right after reception. That almost felt like his entire tape that I saw. It kept happening. The one thing I will say, I forgot what year it was. I want to say it was this past year against Tennessee. He had this crazy route right on the goal line where he basically does a normal hitch, but the hitch does almost like a 360 out. So he kind of just does like a curve and then back out onto his left foot. And the way he spun the DB on that play, no joke, my mouth is dropped. I was just like, all right, like that was way too smooth. I definitely like what I'm seeing. So he's one of those guys where I don't think there's enough tape to maybe dispel some of my concerns with him, but there's kind of some little blips in there that you're like, there could be a relatively unrefined prospect here that could turn into something. So the way that I see Jermaine Burton moving forward is really like, if I can get him at a solid ADP, or like for me below ADP probably, I'll probably try and get as much of him as I can, because I think that there's something there in the right offense. But yeah, what about you guys?
That 38 ADP is not bad. Wide receiver 19, lower than Javon Baker, so the cost isn't going to be there. He's clearly not getting the same hype, and his KTC rank is in the 40s and our D rank has him right there about the same range. So yeah, I mean, I'll take a shot on him in the fourth for sure. I mean, I think these are the kind of profiles you want to target. There's definitely some warts with him too, though, right? Like, we're talking about a guy who also had to transfer like three times, I'm pretty sure, in total. And, you know, I think his last stop, there was an incident, you know, on the sideline where he hit an opposing fan or whatever. So like, and he, you know, he's like, a huge mistake. It was a huge mistake and all that, and says all the right things. And of course, like, but that stuff is there and it's worth noting and it's worth knowing about. And that's definitely has had an impact on, I think, his numbers overall, right? Like, he would have had a more productive career had he not gone through that kind of stuff at Georgia. He was really impressive as a freshman. So if he had kind of kept on that trajectory there without any issues, we might have seen a completely different profile here and be talking about him, you know, two rounds higher, whatever it is, up in the top 24, most likely, for sure. So yeah, like, knowing that, it's like, wow, really interesting profile. If that's what we could have gotten if he didn't do the things he did, but also this is what we have now. This is the profile. So yeah, I don't know. I like Javon Baker more, but I like the cost of Jermaine Burton more. So it landing spot's going to have a huge impact on kind of what we think of these guys, obviously, at the end of the day, and where we want to take them.
The one thing I will say just really quickly is I do think that Jermaine Burton fits a role-based receiver well, whereas I can see Javon Baker be a little bit more widely utilized just based off of his actual play. So in my opinion, those are the types of players that I would rank slightly higher than the role-based receiver, and that kind of has me, you know, internally saying to myself, I would love to get Baker below ADP, but I'm probably gonna have to miss out on him, unfortunately.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Much more well-rounded receiver and ability to be a pseudo wide receiver one type guy, right? Like, he could get there. You could see it happening if you really squint your eyes hard. I can't do that with Jermaine Burton. Not in the same level.
No. Yeah, Burton, kind of based off what you guys said and what I see here, he's kind of giving me like Jameson Williams vibes.
Oh, so. Man, that was rolling through my head. No, that was rolling through my head. But it's obviously Jameson Williams without the cost. But I also think they're really similar. Honestly, they're really similar. There's nothing to think. They're really similar, but the cost is just not as bad. Yeah, it's a great shout.
Cool, good job. So we'll hop into some mailbag questions we have asked over the last couple of weeks to people in our Discord to hit us up with some questions. What better time to answer them than now? So one of the questions was fit versus talent. With wide receivers and tight ends in the 24 class, are some more dependent on landing spots or all? Bowers and Ellie does in the Chargers versus Tennessee, his talent will rise above, but the upside gets capped, for instance. Yeah, I'll be brief. I mean, I think with the tight ends, I think that talent, obviously, I think is a little bit more important than fit. Like, I always go back when like people talk about this. And of course, you know, I can't talk about tight end without bringing up Trey McBride, but we can't forget that Trey McBride's landing spot was not good when he got drafted. He got drafted to sit behind Zach Ertz on an offense that at the time was not really producing tight ends that we really wanted to start in fantasy. But then you had a guy like Trey McBride, who's uber talented, checks all the boxes to be a producer at tight end. Once Zach Ertz left due to injury, he was able to overcome that. So I think with the tight ends, I think that talent, athleticism, draft capital, those things really matter a whole lot when it comes to tight end. Wide receiver, I think it's more fit. I mean, there's just so many different wide receivers who I think were probably good, just didn't go to the right spot. And that happens every year. You know, a lot of potential possible like wide receiver one types go on to a team that already has a wide receiver one type situation, or a bad quarterback or a new coach, and then they just fade out after years. And sometimes I don't think it's really their fault if they were talented, but situation could really, I think, destroy a wide receiver.
Yeah, super interesting. I kind of think the opposite a little bit, but maybe it's more dependent on the level of talent, right? Because I think, you know, you hear always like cream rises to the top. And I think back to like AJ Brown with that, right? Where we hated that landing spot, but he's so good. Does it really matter? And, you know, when I'm looking at like the top, like Neighbors, Marvin Harrison, even Odunze, like those kind of guys, do I really care about the landing spot? But I do agree, like with Jermaine Burton and Javon Baker, yeah, like I care a little bit more. So I do think that, you know, it depends on kind of what tier of player we're talking about for sure. So yeah, I mean, that's just a part of it, I think. But for tight end, landing spot matters so much to me. I feel like where, you know, you need to be in a scheme that is going to utilize you. You need to be on a team that you don't need to, but if you want a top five tight end, you need to be on a team that can get you 90 targets. So you need to be a top two target on your team potentially. So a lot of factors have to line up with the landing spot in the situation, right? Like, I think it's totally, even with, let's say Brock Bowers ends up on the Jets versus ends up in LA, right? With the Chargers, like that's a massive difference. Two different QBs, two really good QBs, but a lot going on there, and expecting a guy to produce year one in those different situations. I mean, you could go down the list. I think that it really makes a difference where these tight ends end up. You know, Sam Laporta, does he do the same thing, even on the Bills, that he did in Detroit, right? I don't know. I don't think so. So I just think for tight end, landing spot is uber, uber important. Like for a guy like Ben Sinnott, that's going to be huge for me. A guy like JT Sanders, even, that's going to be really huge. Like, does he end up in Miami where you can make up in your head, you can concoct a George Kittle like role for him if you want, right? Like, I know based on watching the tape that he can't block like that. But if you want to dream it up, you can do it because the scheme is available there, right? And the targets may be available. Probably not. Definitely can't be a second target on the team, at least in the current iteration of that offense. So, you know, you kind of have to really dissect it and understand what you're looking at and what the opportunity can be with the tight end. So I think it really, really, really matters in terms of landing spot. I think it matters less for wide receivers, and it's more talent based, like level of talent based.
Yeah, this sucks. I don't like going third at all. So like, yeah.
Well, I agree with Billy now. So
like, I looked like a bobblehead for both of you. I'm like, yeah, I agree with that point. And then I was like, oh no,
I gotta start letting Jake go. My bad.
The more that Billy talked, I'm like, shit, maybe he's right.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it really is dependent on the type of receiver, to be honest, more so to Billy's point. I do think that the margins are really finer when they're role-based receivers, because certain role-based receivers just don't fit into teams that end up drafting them, unfortunately. And I think that does end up happening more often for those, you know, tertiary receivers than they do for the elite top three, top four in a given draft. So I don't want to repeat anything that Billy said, but just to kind of, I guess, repeat, unfortunately, you know, those elite receivers, I just don't care about landing spot at all. I'm going to define them by their talent. With regards to the elite tight ends, I do find myself, you know, kind of questioning whether or not they're in the right spot. I'm thinking already Michael Mayer, right? Like, he's a great example. I think in a different team, if he was in Buffalo, what would his performance level look like versus Dalton Kincaid? And it's not like he had a competition issue versus Austin Hooper, right? Like, these are concerns.
Quarterback issue.
Yeah, which you can't sometimes control, unfortunately. They definitely went into the season with a different plan with Jimmy Garoppolo, which I think could have actually been really beneficial for Michael Mayer. And those things you can't really change, unfortunately. But, you know, moving into this upcoming season with a new offensive coordinator, new changes happening across the clubhouse with potentially a new quarterback starting, you know, could be Gardner Minshew, which we all know is relatively exciting for receiving targets in general and his fancy footwork. And so, you know, that's kind of the way that I'm seeing it. But at the end of the day, sometimes it really is just player dependent too. Sometimes it could even be the physical geography of the landing spot. These guys who have been playing in the South their entire lives and have to play in Buffalo outdoors during the winter can't handle it. Or you're playing in the rain in Seattle all the time. Like, those are the types of things that do also have major impacts that I think everyone's like, oh, it was talent, or oh, it was a bad scheme. But sometimes it's just like, maybe the coaches didn't interact well with that player. Maybe they weren't positive enough around, you know, them dropping three passes in their first five games. Like, those are sometimes, yeah. Bill Belichick seems like a terrible person to be a rookie, right? Like,
in this day and age, yeah. Like 15 years ago, it was like great,
perfect,
because that was the culture. But now it's just different. You're allowed to like have feelings.
Exactly. So yeah, that's kind of the way that I see it. You know, I tried to bring it in a different perspective, because otherwise I would just be, we'd be three talking heads saying the same shit. So yeah, hopefully that was beneficial for some folks.
You always bring the unique perspective, Jake. No worries, brother. All right. You're muted. Mute.
Keep doing that. All right. What is one league mate characteristic/trait you find unworkable? Meaning you can't work with that person anymore.
Jake, you take this one.
Dude, I have a couple, but I guess I only have to pick one. All right.
I don't want to take any of them.
Yeah, I'm just going to describe Billy. So
especially lately, I've been hitting you with the sauce for sure.
Dude, oh man. Send me the same traits you'd send like 8 other people in console wars. Okay, anyway. moving forward, I would say that my big qualm is the lackadaisical manager. And by lackadaisical, I mean like they think they know what they want, but they don't know what they want because they can't define what they want. So they come out and reach out to you and say, hey, I want this. And I say, cool, send me an offer. And then they say, you send me an offer. And I say, I'm not selling that player. You're trying to buy them. I don't understand what this conversation is. And honestly, that is such an unworkable trait for me that I, no joke, just never interact with those people. If they reach out to me, I am cordial, but it's literally so cyclical that it just turns into the same conversation that we had 3 months ago and didn't get anywhere about typically the same players. Like, you can literally go into the, you know, the archive of conversations and just see the same thing happen. It's like, oh, I want Jordan Addison. Cool. Send me an offer for Jordan Addison. Nothing happens. And so for me, that's an unworkable trait. What about you guys?
No, that one actually hits me. It hits home for me. Something that just happened to me like 2 days ago. I put AJ Brown on the block in a league, and I get somebody hits me in the DMs and says, I'll take the bait. What are you looking for AJ Brown? Okay, no, okay. If that's the worst of it, it's not that bad, right? Well, that's not the worst of it. So already I'm annoyed, obviously. So I'm like, you know what? Let me just look at this team and see if there's like something I could even, you know, that would get my juices flowing. Okay, there's a Trey McBride there. I'm like, I'm kind of lacking at tight end at the top. I want to, you know, get an elite tight end on my team. Maybe I can get a McBride plus or something, kind of work on a little pseudo rebuild churn deal, right? And I said, could you want to work something around McBride? Well, not really what I wanted to do, but I could be tempted. Send an offer. Wait, I put the guy on the trade block. I don't understand how I'm the one who needs to send an offer now. Like, that is so unworkable. Like, and this is the same thing happens with this person every single trade negotiation, where it ends up, oh yeah, well, let me know if you come up with something. I guess we're just not going to have an offer being sent right now, because no, that's not how this is working. And and I actually ended up sending an offer. And because if you're going to do that to me, I'm going to send you something where I'm getting the win, right? Like, screw you. That's ridiculous. Like, and I'm not going to do something crazy, but like, I'm getting a plus. Like, and that's what I did. And it was like, oh, I see them as even. I'm like, all right, bye, later. And like, that's not what we're... You send an offer first, bro. Like, that, if I put a player on the block and you're interested, it's very similar to what you're saying. You send an offer. But that trait of like always coming back to basically you have to send the offer, and I'm never going to kind of send you something first. And I know what you're trying to do. You don't ever want to be on the wrong end when you send something first and me just accept it. Like, I get it. But it's, I don't know. I don't like it. Sorry. Allowed me to rant.
I'll be the adult in the room here and say that there are no characteristics or traits that will make me unworkable with another person. No, that's not true.
There's no way. I was going to say,
what a cop-out, dude.
No, I mean, honestly, there are certain things that like you keep getting from the same managers over and over that, instead of like not making it workable for me, but I don't look at the trade that long. Or at all. Like, typically, if I know it's from dude A, I just like, I don't even know why I'm opening this up. Like, and I just usually end up declining. But the biggest thing for me is trying to like, I don't even know, mansplain's the right word, but try to explain to me why this trade works for me. Like,
Oh, that's the worst.
I don't need that from that you. Is the and worst. If it's like always that way, like, oh man, this is a steal. Oh man, blah, blah. It's like, if it's such a steal, then why are you sending it? Like, I don't know. I feel like in a way that is insulting to like, just like the level of work that we put into this. And like, yeah, I'm digesting this content all the time. I'm looking into these things all the time, more than I probably should. Like, I don't need you to tell me anything about my players. Like, I rostered them for a reason. Like, I picked these players. Like, every once in a while, I end up ones I don't want. But for the most part, yeah, I don't need anybody to tell me why the trade works out for me. And to do it over and over again, it's just like, oh my God. And when I say no, no means no. Like, CeeDee Lamb is not available. Like, stop trying to get CeeDee Lamb after me. I'm not trading him. Like, I need him on my team. Like, those things.
That's great. Yeah, I agree with that, though, for sure. We know a lot of those league mates exist.
Yeah. And I the thing is, I don't do those things. Those are things that I don't do in trade negotiations. Yes. I never tell somebody why the trade's going to work out for them. And someone says, hey, no, I don't really want to move down from the 101 for this, or I don't want to give up these two picks to move up. Like, I'm not going to just keep adding stuff on to get it done. Like, that's annoying.
I'm sorry. The only other thing I'll say is I cannot stand the, that's my initial offer when it's like an absolutely atrocious offer. Like your first offer being like, oh, I'm just trying to get trade talk starting, being like, you know, you want AJ Brown for like Marvin Mims in a second. Like that's starting to get me angry for sure. But it's not starting trade negotiations. So that's the last thing I'll say. That just came to mind as we were getting ready to move on.
No, thank you. I was literally going to say the same thing. Someone sent, I think recently, it was like JSN for the 207. I'm like, do you expect me to respond to this with words? Because I'm not going to. Like, I'm not going to waste energy to be like, oh, hey, dude, you know, if you would send me the 107, I'd think about it. Like, what? Like, or do you think I'm that stupid that I'm like, oh fuck, the 207 right now feels really good? Like, come, it's borderline.
Market's low on JSN. Got to get out for whatever I can right now. Like, yeah.
Didn't realize I had QJ. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Just a piece of advice. Like, no other dynasty manager is going to do you any favors ever. Right. So if they come out trying to say or pretend or act like they are, like, they're not. They're just trying to bullshit you. Try to be honest. Be honest with your trades. Try to win them, but be honest. All right. Next question is this class very similar to the 2021 class? Ooh, let's go back. Five quarterbacks in the first round that didn't turn out well compared to hype. Three wide receivers in the first round that turned out elite, and one great rookie tight end. Who do we got? That was a long time ago.
So I am bringing up the ADP from DLF in 2021 to help us out just a little bit to kind of think about, you know, just this thought exercise of is this class, you know, similar in terms of the structure and should we be worried? I think, you know, the question really hits on should we be worried about the quarterbacks, right? Looking at Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields at the top, Trey Lance. Yeah. Zach Wilson, that's three that didn't hit in Fields, Lance, and Wilson. Is there another one in this class?
You missed Mac Jones. About it.
Mac Jones, yep. No, another one that did not hit. I mean, I guess technically you could say he hit maybe by like a technical standards in fantasy, but not a good hit. So yeah, I mean, just looking at that and kind of comparing to this class, we can just start with the quarterbacks. I mean, I think this class is... there's some similarities for sure, but I think this class is more talented as a whole. Like, I think Jaden Daniels is a more proven prospect than Trey Lance. Like, much more proven prospect.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, easy.
I think Drake May is a much more enticing prospect than a Mac Jones, right?
Zach Wilson.
Or even a Zach Wilson. It's similar. Mm. Definitely some similarities. But I think a little bit more enticing, like some more proven productivity over a longer period of time and those kind of things. So I think from the QB standpoint, I would be a little bit less concerned about this class. The running backs are just, I mean, it's not even close, but you know, I'll throw it out to you guys. Should we be worried about the wide receiver class, talking about, you know, all this talk about how deep it is and all that stuff, and then you end up looking at here and you have these Rondale Moores, these Rashad Batemans. I mean, there's some good hits in here, pass over the Jalen Waddles, but you know, Terrace Marshall, Elijah Moore, Tylan Wallace, not at the same level of prospect, but yeah, those kind of guys. What do you guys think about that in comparison to the 2024 class?
Yeah, you missed the best one, De'Ami Brown. which I still hold on like three rosters, mainly because that Commander's wide receiver room is so bad that I'm just like, who knows, you know, new coaching staff, maybe they like him. Probably not, but maybe, just maybe. So I guess like for me, the wide receiver talent, based off of the tape that I watched back in 2021 as well, I do think that this wide receiver group is significantly more talented, even though we did have Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith. Like, I think that some of the wide receiver talent that's coming out specifically in the 2024 class is slightly more raw than the group that you're looking at here, and thus the range of outcomes I think will be significantly wider. But you do have some really unique talent that kind of fell, like a Nico Collins, who I'm going down the path of being really, really wide receiver heavy in this class, just like I was last year as well. And I feel like I found a lot of gems last year across the board, and I think it really just comes down to being able to draft with a lot of conviction. Because if you know what you're looking for in talent, there are some bombs in here that you knew were bombs from the very onset. Rashad Bateman was a bomb. Like, sorry. Terrace Marshall was a bomb. Elijah Moore, I personally never liked him. I know the two of you did. I personally was getting away from him. But I think an even better one, though, is Tylan Wallace. Very obviously a bomb. Rondale Moore, he's kind of on the fence for me. I still think that there's something there. I do think his size is underappreciated, but he is now going into an offense where I think he could actually have a breakout, which is kind of funny because we always say that about him every year. But, you know, he's only, 23 going on 24. So,
yearly tradition.
There's year four breakout, baby. It's coming. He's going to be the first. So, you know, I think that's kind of where I see these two wide receiver rookie classes. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. And whoever asked this question, it's a very good one because, yeah, there are a lot of similarities here. And one thing we're just going to have to kind of come to grips with with these quarterbacks is one or two of them is going to hit.
Yeah.
Just the way it is. One or two of them is going to hit. But yeah, I think as far as drafting goes, like, I'm going to probably go wide receiver heavy too. It just is what it is. There's a lot of running backs in this class that we want to prop up because they have certain traits, but we're just so starved for, like, even a Kenneth Walker. We don't even have, like, a Kenneth Walker in this class, I don't really think. So, I think the similarities are very close here.
Question off of that, just because this is how my brain works. I'm sorry. This is for both of you. Let's say you're sitting there with three of the first four picks. How many quarterbacks are you drafting? And you're taking all the picks. Like, you're not trading out. You have to take all. So let's say it's the 101, 103, 104, just to make it easy.
You said you have three of the first four picks?
Yeah. So the 101, 103, 104.
101, 103, 104. I think if I wasn't like desperate, like rebuild QB situation, like I'd probably only take one, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I would probably, if I can, take both wide receivers and the best QB that, you know, hopefully you get Jaden Daniels is kind of how I would hope Jaden Daniels and the two wide receivers. That's what I would do. I've been thinking about this a little bit, and we're going to dig into the QBs in a couple weeks, and they definitely have some warts. And just looking at the 2021 class and knowing, like Uriah said, only one or two of these guys is really likely to hit. You don't want to get overexposed necessarily if you don't have to. And there's a much greater chance both of those wide receivers hit than there are the QBs hit. And they're going to offer most likely similar dynasty value to a top 12-ish quarterback in that range. So you can maneuver around a lot better with established players than you can with these mystery boxes. So yeah, that's how I would approach it.
Cool. Yeah, that's why I asked. I asked exactly that because, to Uriah's point, you know, if the idea is only two are going to hit, do you double down on your already poor odds, Or would you rather go for the higher hit rate player, which would be the wide receivers in that situation? I agree. I think that was a solid response. Sorry, you're right. Go ahead.
I think that's exactly what I'd do. I'd take the quarterback and then the next two wide receivers.
Yeah. The only thing I think that's worth touching on otherwise about this class, maybe really quick, would be the tight ends versus the 2021 class, where you had a Kyle Pitts and then nobody else. Pat Freiermuth, I remember that year, was super underrated. And I think I was saying, if I remember myself correctly, that he would be a tight end one in a lot of classes if it weren't for Kyle Pitts. And he got way overshadowed to the point where I don't have the ADP up on the screen anymore, but he was, I believe, like a third round pick.
Second round pick.
Yeah. He was a late second round pick. But, you know, you're talking about like Dammy Brown and Michael Carter and Tylan Wallace over him. You know what I'm talking about? And it's like, so just thinking back then and looking at now, I don't think that there's as a clear cut number two tight end as there was back then. I mean, for me, there is, but Pat Freiermuth was definitely a much better prospect than I think JT Sanders or Ben Sinnott, any way you look at it. And we'll get into the tight ends too in a week or two and talk about Jaheim Bell. But anyway, I just think, yeah, exactly. I just think that, you know, this class is a little different at tight end, where it's very similar at tight end, where there is one clear tight end at the top, but this time it actually is that way, where that class wasn't as much that way. I think there was actually another really viable option at tight end, and Pat Freiermuth. We just don't know which one that is this year.
All right, top of them trades. So we have Trevor Lawrence for Brock Purdy plus Pacheco and Wandale. And do you for? I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say, but I think I'm just going to take the Purdy side. He's done enough for me. I was out on him as long as I possibly can, but as long as he's there in San Francisco, like I'm all for Purdy. I think I should be trying to sell Pacheco, but maybe he still get one more year out of him. And I think that Wandale was probably the best wide receiver on that Giants team, which is not saying much. But in short, I'll take the Purdy side here.
I'm honestly on the fence with this one, to be honest. I don't like the pluses that much. And I do think that the overall landscape, and I know Paul Patterson has talked about this on Pure Potential with regards to Trevor Lawrence, but I think that the runway for Trevor is going to be long in general, just given, even though his like level of performance hasn't necessarily been equivalent to his situation, I think his longevity in the NFL is automatically kind of successful enough to give him longer extension than a Brock Purdy will in general, just given draft capital and recency of performances. And so I think overall, long term, the Trevor Lawrence side is probably the longer standing value, whereas the Brock Purdy side is more immediate. To your point, Uriah, I think Pacheco is probably in his last viable fantasy year, to be completely honest. And Wandale needs a new quarterback. So if he doesn't hit one this upcoming draft, then he's going to have another down year. So where does that put you here? It's really giving me Trevor Lawrence versus Brock Purdy, and I'm probably going to take Trevor Lawrence.
Excellent.
That's fair. I think I would probably take the Purdy side. It's actually definitely a fair point. I actually tend to agree with you. I'm just probably going to play it in a shorter window.
Yeah.
And assuming I can maybe flip Pacheco after another good year kind of thing and add to this team. And I don't know, like, yeah, like I agree Trevor Lawrence lasts longer probably than Brock Purdy, but am I going to see those days necessarily before trading Purdy away again or something like that? Maybe, you know, I think I can try to foreshadow or forecast that a little bit and take the immediate W. But it's close enough to where, like, if you feel the way you do, totally take T-Law. I get that.
This trade reminds me a lot of the DU Trade Archive plug episode about Trevor Lawrence trade that I actually did with Uriah, where I traded Tua plus Nick Chubb, who was turning 27, plus a third, which honestly, value-wise, kind of feels exactly the same as this trade for Trevor Lawrence. And funny enough, Trevor has only exceeded in value, even though he hasn't really performed, and Tua has only dropped. So you're still seeing Trevor somewhere in around the mid-second for ADP, and Tua is now touching it like the top of the fourth. I think that's honestly probably the future state of this trade as well. But it's really just dependent on your view of what future valuation is going to be on the two quarterbacks. But that's just kind of my perception of it, at least.
Trevor Lawrence, QB 11, Brock Purdy, QB 13 right now.
Sexy.
Yeah.
All right. Next one, Geno Smith, T. Higgins, Drake London, the 112 and 212 for C.J. Stroud, Zamir White.
And console wars.
Yeah, and the entire league.
I think you missed Isaiah Likely, by the way.
Yeah. You know, I think that's what's going to...
I see Uriah's brain trying to, like, calculate and compute everything he's seeing.
I try to do my best, you know, before I talk, but...
I'm definitely I'm cutting your face up for sure, brother. You are getting zoomed in on.
Oh my god. Give me CJ Stroud and Zamir White. But barely. The thing is, is Geno even gonna play the whole year? Like, they might draft a quarterback. They traded for Sam Howell. Geno is not one of those quarterbacks I really want on my team right now if I could help it. CJ Stroud is a quarterback I want on my team if I can help it. We play super flex. I think Zamir White's going to have a really good year. It's a lot to give up, but I think that's what you have to give up. So I will still go with CJ Stroud.
Bringing in hometown boy Michael Penix to Washington.
They want him here. The news radio people want him here bad. So
Jake, what are your thoughts on this one? This is my trade for those out there that don't know that. Could have put that out there. And again, Console Wars is what we talked about last week for the listeners that are returning. But if not, this is a 36-team league. The way to think about it is three 12-team leagues combined into one. They're three separate divisions that play each other separately like normal leagues, and leave it at that for this trade.
Yeah, we actually texted a lot during your trade negotiations here, Billy and I, and yeah, I think Billy got to a point where he was able to add even just a little bit extra value on the CJ Stroud side that it made sense. Yeah, I think it's CJ Stroud and Zamir White by a little distance, but if you really were to break it down, I've got Geno as like a mid-second. I've got Higgins as probably somewhere between mid to late first. London somewhere in early first. So you're talking about almost three firsts, two seconds for Stroud and Zamir White. Feels pretty close, except when you think about that Stroud is now QB3 in market value. You're also talking about trying to create massive value gains in a 36-team league. There's only three copies. Yeah, I know that sounds crazy to say that, but there's only three copies of an elite quarterback against 33 other teams. So like for me, I think the gap or value gap that you get from having a player like CJ Stroud is going to be exponentially more than anything you traded away, especially given the format. So that's the only reason why I think it's such a large gap, even though you can like kind of place values on all the players and it kind of makes sense and maybe it looks even. I think given format, it changes it for me. What about you, Billy?
I got the CJ Stroud side, so obviously that's where I land. But I first of all, I think I remember when I finished this trade, like the conversation, I think I told you this trade without Zamir White or something like that. And you were like, I don't like that. And I knew that you weren't going to like it that much, even when I added Zamir White. But I do think, like you're saying, given the context of the league, you're trying to, you know, build a super team or build super value so that you can build that super team. I really wish that the teams that had Josh Allen didn't have Josh Allen, because they're all people that know me really well. And they're all people I know really well who most likely are pretty heady players and aren't going to move Josh Allen plus for CJ Stroud, right? And like, that's what I think would be the best thing that I could do here is something like that, or maybe go to a Pat Mahomes plus or something like that. Now that's one I don't think I've tried yet, but I do think that that's kind of like the next iteration of this. Like, can I double up on this move? And when I made this move, I mean, to this day, I'm a little like, damn, man, I gave up a lot. Like Higgins, London, like that's a lot of really high end talent. But I also won the league last year with Higgins not playing much of the year, London at like, you know, 1% because of a quarterback, and I didn't have the picks, and Likely did help me out, but I'm hoping I can get by with somebody else and Mark Andrews, who I already have. So I've thought through it a little bit of like, you know, what I'm giving up versus what I'm getting. And also it's worth saying, I only had Dak Prescott and Geno. That's it. And that's not like super stable in terms of QB room to me. So at the very least, I think I've left myself here with a supreme upgrade at the quarterback position and potential double up in terms of value gain if I can make a subsequent move. Probably have to do it before the season starts. But even if not, I think I'm okay with the move. And I think that getting Zamir White really helps me continue to try to compete as well. It adds points back into my roster that I lost with a guy like London or Higgins that I probably do need a little bit. And I had a thin running back room, so it kind of helped that in that respect too.
The one thing I also wanted to say, because you brought it up actually with Isaiah Likely, I think you found a way to kind of devalue each of the bigger assets on the side that you traded away. It makes it really hard to justify or put a value around Higgins, London, and Likely in this trade, because for a lot of people, when there are so many assets on one side, it kind of functionally is really hard to be like, what did that actually equate to make this an equal trade or make it a trade that actually happens, if that makes sense. So this for me is actually almost a great distractor trade. If you ever wanted to get back into a Drake London, which we all know you would, or a T. Higgins, which we all know you would, or an Isaiah Likely, which we all know you would as a Mark Andrews owner. So the reason I say that is because I do think that this is actually a really heady play to kind of mitigate
future loss,
if that makes sense. Because you can actually now find ways to, I think, regain those players at different points of the season without people being like, oh, he gave up Drake for AJ Brown, you know, like something like that, where you're like, oh, I know exactly what Drake London is now worth. This makes it a little bit harder because there's so many pieces in this trade.
Oh man, that's super interesting, because I didn't even think about that, but you're right. It kind of, it's the opposite of, well, not the opposite, it's setting the market in a different way, where it's like, kind of, like you said, devalued the market on these players based on them being packaged for this, for a quarterback, essentially, because you look at it and you're like, well, the sum of the whole, you know, the sum of the whole parts doesn't really add up. Yeah, that's super interesting thinking about that in terms of going back and trying to get one of those assets, because I definitely would like to have London on my team. Like, I would much prefer not to have to give up London in that during this trade. And I also think that it's worth mentioning, going a little bit long on this trade, but I do think it's worth mentioning, you know, I think Jake said to me at the time, you could have waited maybe closer to the draft for the values of the picks, first of all, to increase a little bit, but also maybe something happens with Higgins and his value shifts, you know, positively, where maybe I get this deal done for a little bit less. Maybe it's the 212 I don't have to put in, or the 112 or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Something could have been different. So I think that's a fair shout too. I do think that Jake has said I'm impatient with my quarterbacks in a lot of spots. And I do think that's true, but I think that this is a good move. While I do think he's right that I am impatient about my quarterbacks, I think this was still a good move. Screw you, Jake.
All right. It's okay. It'll be all right, bud. I love you. I'll be
you're
there
clearly
for you next time.
Living rent free in my head. Living rent free in my head.
The worst part is that you knew that verbatim. Like, that was like a text that stuck forever.
And this is the problem. This is what is on my mind all the time. Fantasy shit. Like, it's a problem.
The next one is mine. It's actually currently an out offer. I won't say in what league, just for my own privacy standpoint, keep my identity behind closed doors to whoever's listening to this. So I would be trading away the 101 and 201 for the 102 and 105.
Yeah.
Smash.
Yeah. Yeah, no disagreement here.
All right. Yeah, it's been sitting there for like 2 days, and I'm just curious. I know that person's pretty active, so I'm just curious if they're contemplating it, or they're just like, this is a fucking terrible trade and I'm just gonna sit on this until it expires. But yeah, I'm probably about a day or two from just reaching out, just being like, hey, where are things at, let me know. But I'm trying to put myself in a situation to not really be so reliant on the 101 and find myself some additional assets up in the top five. So yeah,
I think I shared with you guys, I had a similar offer where someone offered me the 101, I have the 103, 106. And I just feel a whole lot more comfortable with the 103 and 106 than the singular 101 at this point in time. Just knowing how much talent is there between 103 and 106, I think I'm just going to stand pat there.
Kind of goes back to the question that Jake was asking about, like, who would you pick in the top three kind of thing. And it goes back to it because I'm not like so confident that Caleb Williams is going to be the next coming of Patrick Mahomes that I need to have him. Like, 102, yeah. I'll take whoever, and I'll take the wide receiver or vice versa. But probably that's the direction I would go to secure whatever quarterback I want, and then get the wide receiver. Or if I'm like enamored with Brock Bowers in his landing spot, you could probably push it. I wouldn't.
If you're in that situation, right, Billy? Like, and sorry for bringing all these things to be a little long. I know that's the downside of having me on an episode.
No, I appreciate it, actually.
So let's say you're in that situation. We're going back to the idea of, you know, owning multiple high-end future assets. You got the 101, the 103, 104, we'll call it, or the 101, 102, and 104, something along those lines. Do you intentionally evade Caleb, knowing that the person who owns the 102 in that situation doesn't need Caleb, and then overdrafts on someone like a Malik Nabers if you have Marvin Harrison Jr. over Malik or something like that? Like, do you play that game, or is it not worth it and you're giving someone else more value at the 102?
I don't like the risk, because you never know what the other person's going to do. It's just, there's too many variables there. You're counting on somebody liking another player more than the one you're hoping that the guy that you see as 102 drops to 103, and it's just kind of risky.
Well, in that situation, right, if you're owning the 101, you probably need a quarterback. So the way I'm looking at it is, based off the conversation we're having before, if you feel that the odds are in your favor that you just need a singular quarterback from those first four picks, if you give up the quarterback at the 101, put someone else in the situation to draft that quarterback at the 102, if they don't and they go for, let's say, wide receiver two, for instance, you're still stuck at that wide receiver two at the 103 or the QB1 at the 103. So the reason I say that is, like, can you kind of manipulate that situation? Like, there's no situation where you're stuck, right? You're either getting Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., and Jaden Daniels, or you're getting Caleb Williams, Malik Nabers, and then the 104, which could be anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. If you can exert your force like that, absolutely, then I would definitely do that. Yes. Maybe I didn't understand initially, but I do think I would do that.
I didn't want to say it so directly to make it sound so manipulative, but yeah,
you should be trying to manipulate the board. This is a game.
No. I didn't want to pose the question with manipulation to make you think a certain thing is more so what I'm saying.
Oh, fair. But
yeah. Of course. I'm trying to manipulate everyone that I'm playing with, right? Like, that's how I'm supposed to be better than other people. I have no control over the fucking players. So the least I can do is control the rest of the league however I can, you know? But yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing. I want to say, like, there's some things I'm hearing about Caleb Williams that I need to watch the tape and see it for myself. But just from, you know, I've watched plenty of USC tape watching the other players and Brennan Rice and Marshawn Lloyd, and this idea that he can't play within structure. And that's actually why they played him the way they did, and also why he plays the way he does, because the offensive line was also terrible. But, like, his first inclination is just like, I'm going out and I'm going to create something, and, like, eventually I'll make something happen, which he does because he's amazing. And he, you know, he's very creative, and that's his superpower, really. But also the idea that, like, legitimately he doesn't really have the skill set right now developed to play within structure and, like, just hit like a designed slant, or, you know, stay in the pocket and go through his progressions that way. And so, like, again, I need to watch it for myself, but that is we should already know that these guys are not surefire prospects no matter what. But then you start thinking about those things and you're like, yeah, like, he could hit just like Jaden Daniels can hit, just like Drake May can hit. There's not that much separation between them. So you should not be concerned about moving back a spot and picking up an extra first at all, ever. Like, if this was the 101 and the 112, I'd do it still. If it was, like, probably to about the 110, I might be fine doing that deal to where that tier break kind of hits around the 108, 109.
No, that was great. Thank you.
All right, last one. Oh, Debbie. Here we go. Devontae Adams for the 25 first, third, and Devin Neal. Debbie, why don't you explain this?
So, yeah, this is a pretty depleted Debbie league where the initial draft was a 10-round Debbie draft, and then subsequent drafts are 5 rounds where it's mixed Debbie and incoming rookies, and I think anything on the waiver wire, maybe, I don't know, just anything really at that point, the supplemental draft. So Verily Depleted the First is going to not have too many players, though. I mean, obviously over time, like, things can build back up as, you know, high school players hit college and whatnot, but it's still going to be fairly depleted and you're going to have a lot of unknowns, right? So this isn't your typical 25 first where you're going to have a shot at the top running back prospect. I'm trying to think who that is, but like a Trayvon Henderson or whatever it is. That guy doesn't exist, right? He's already on a team. So the 25 first and third exist in that universe. And then Devin Neal, who is the running back for Kansas, to just give a little background, kind of workhorse profile, 40 time, 4.5. Age 20, going back to school for his last eligible year, had two really good seasons the past 2 years. I think he's a projected like third round-ish pick. Yeah, draft projection just a year ahead, but around third. Pretty highly ranked recruit for four-star recruits. So that's kind of what I'm getting back in the Devy player. So 25 first, third, and Devin Neal for Devonta Adams. My team is like fringe competitive, but I just see that I'm in a place where I probably won't get there. Definitely not a bye week team. So I can start churning off some of these aging assets, and Devonta Adams is my first in doing so. What do you think about this deal?
Yeah, if you're thinking that you're not going to have a chance to contend this year, there's not going to be a lot of years left where you're going to get any type of first for Adams, whether it's in Devy or Dynasty. So yeah, I don't mind moving off of Adams this way, especially if you think you're going to be kind of in purgatory with the league as far as not top four.
Yeah. This was another one that we had conversation about via text. And I still feel kind of the same way that I had texted Billy, which was basically like, I feel like we should learn a little bit from our interactions with Mike Evans last offseason. This feels like a sell too soon situation where really all Devonta needs to do is probably hit two out of the first 3 weeks of the season, and you can get a little bit more on top of this. If you are trying to go young, you could probably throw in a better asset than Devin Neal moving forward too. I'm not saying he's necessarily bad. I just think that there's probably higher prospects that you can go towards. But at the end of the day, if you're feeling like Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew isn't really going to be able to elevate Adams in those first 3 weeks, I totally get it and want to get out of it. So, you know, it's the same way I felt about Mike last offseason. Like I said, sold him for relatively cheap. I think I sold him for like one late first in one league, and I sold him for like six picks in another. None of them were firsts. And, you know, to this day, I still don't feel like I got enough in either of those trades. But at the end of the day, that's kind of the game you have to play. It just feels slightly early.
Yeah, I get that. I do think that there's a concern that Adams at 31, and I know that there's some data to support this, that at 31 that there's a cliff and that he could not necessarily fall off, but just with the situation that he's in, it seems really difficult for it all to come together again unless something really drastically changed with the quarterback, which could happen in this draft. Like, they could trade up and do something for sure, which would give him an added boost like you're talking about. Maybe I jumped the gun here. I am trying to get ahead for sure of this. And I do question, like, Uriah, I do think I agree with him. I don't know if next year I'd get a first again, no matter what. Like, even if he had a pretty good year at 32 years old, it's hard to convince somebody to give up a high-end pick for a 32-year-old receiver. And Devin Neal, honestly, if he was in this draft, he would be the running back one, easily the running back one in this class. And he should have been. He just went back to school. 1,280 yards last season with 16 touchdowns for Kansas. Probably going to do something similar again this season, aside from an injury. So I'm not like supremely confident in that asset. Anything can happen for sure. But I think that I'm going to get a pretty solid prospect heading into 24 with Devin Neal. So I think that Jake makes some really valid points here. Like, I've done this before with a Mike Evans and certain spots I came out fine, but certain spots I definitely sold them a little low. Devonta Adams, I mean, we just did a DU Trade Archives episode on where I traded Devonta Adams for QJ in a second. truthfully, this feels better than that, though. This does feel better, even though it's a Devi league, and you know, you can kind of equate maybe the Devi first to a second ish. They present a lot more value, especially market wise, than that, and potential. Generally, like if you can get like, you know, a very high end freshman or something like that, like it could turn out to be a lot more value than a QJ or something like that, or it could be what QJ was, you know, the year before, which is like a very high end value in a Devi league. That said, I think this is kind of trending in a better direction than what I've typically done with these aging receivers. It's also a little bit older than Mike Evans was and in a worse situation. So I feel a little bit better about it. But I do think that Jake brings up some definitely fair concerns.
All I will say is that Baker Mayfield was Mike Evans' quarterback last offseason. So I don't know if it was that much better of a circumstance. It obviously turned out to be. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I think perception last offseason was
we
like,
read it wrong.
Holy shit, the guy who just sucked so much in Carolina, he's going to be absolutely terrible again in Tampa Bay, you know, like.
But okay, so wait, they have what, Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell? So yeah, I mean, look, Gardner Minshew could do just fine for Adams. That's totally, totally reasonable. So situation aside, let's throw that aside. I still feel okay about it. 31 years old, yeah, knowing that I probably wouldn't get this deal a year from now, no matter what. No, but I want to concede that because I do agree. I think you're right. And I'm not trying to make up a reason, right? Like, I'm just trying to give it as it is.
All right. Last one, AJ Brown for Andrew.
Oh, no, sorry. I was actually, that was kind of on this same team. I was thinking about moving AJ Brown, again, trying to kind of like churn this team a little bit, change things up, gain some value. Moving AJ Brown for Andrews in the 108. I sent that offer. Manager was like, that is a pretty solid offer, but I think I need the depth to kind of continue the rebuild. Would adding a Devi prospect, like a high-end Devi prospect, would that be too much? Like AJ Brown and a fairly solid Devi prospect to try to get that deal done and try to get more immediate value, essentially.
Yeah, given what I've heard you say about your team, I don't know why you'd be trying to get rid of AJ Brown.
What's the TEP on this?
1.25.
Yeah, I would not.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's good. That's appreciate that.
Yeah, I think if you get a bigger boost on TEP, I would say absolutely. But yeah, I think at 1.25, like by all means, Andrews is creating those margins at any TEP. But yeah, I'd rather not.
Anything else you guys want to talk about? Anything else on your mind?
Nothing I want to talk about, but definitely want to let everybody know again to tune into not this pod drop. This pod will drop over the next day or two, but the Matt Waldman pod drop. We will be recording with him tomorrow. Should have YouTube drop as well for that. So just really exciting stuff. Going to dig into his RSP. Like I said at the beginning, just an absolute behemoth of a document. The amount of work this guy puts into breaking down the film and creating essentially data from the film is ridiculous. And I really just want to dig into his process, like what he thinks about kind of what we do in the community as, you know, novice film grinders and trying to kind of work our way up and all that kind of stuff. I want to really dig into that with him. We'll get into some player stuff with him, but I think a little deeper dive into what he does and why he does it and what he thinks about the process in general. So very, very excited for Matt Waldman. And we're going to have some other guests on post-draft. Other than that, we're doing prospect profiles and emptying the notebook on prospect profiles over the next couple of weeks and really grinding that out. So stick with us.
And maybe a live draft.
Oh, yeah, dude. Big, big shout. Yeah, I need to get that. I was trying to get past this Matt Waldman thing before I hit the Discord with that, but that's a great shout. I want to schedule a live rookie mock draft for the weekend of the NFL draft. Pretty much Sunday once we know most of the landing spots and I'll have that preset, have everybody kind of ready to get in there and get drafting, because that'll be a lot of fun. We'll have it on the YouTube channel and yeah, we're gonna have a blast with that.
I'm looking forward to that. I think that'll be fun. All right, so yeah, go ahead, give us a follow on Twitter at Dynasty Underdog, at Uriah Dawkins, at Willie Beeman FF, at Jake Abrams. I should change that on the show sheet. No more D there. That's okay. Obviously, join our Discord. It's free. It's awesome. Stays pretty active year-round right now. Check us out on YouTube. Jake and Billy have a bunch of extra stuff going on there all the time. And yeah, have a good night.
Dogs in the yard, might need a guard. Every loss, taken to heart. Me first, that cannot be. Must be these underdog episodes, see? Feeling much better, so suddenly. Under the moniker, Monica G. Crafted at night, while all of them sleep. I won't look a fool, taking this tool. Defeating the opposition around me. No, no, I'm not sorry. Yes, I'm taking this knowledge imparted. Just barking, no harm, don't be startled. Yes, I'm taking the title, and it's so vital. Thanks for the ride, I'll never be idle. Turn up the dial, it's about to get wild. And the points gon' pile up.
Dynasty underdog fight. Down, up at a day and the night. Now, easy as flying a kite. Now, come take a look at it right. Now, dynasty underdog bite. Down, up at a day and the night. Now, easy as flying a kite.